entertainment.ie.
I love the way you say film.
Hello, you're very welcome along to another episode of The Film Show. I'm Mike Sheridan, and I'm joined as always by Brian Lloyd and Dee Malumbi. We are now of the visual medium. We are now visually out there.
Yeah.
You know?
Hi.
Don't know how I feel about it.
I don't know how I feel about that because, as my mother pointed out in her one of her many critiques
of
my work.
Sure.
She was like, you can't see her face. I was like, man, it's a podcast.
You're not supposed
you know? To. And we were like, you know, well, like it's done quite well on YouTube. I think we're up at a couple of thousand views on YouTube, as well as all the, as well as all the downloads and streams that we get.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. So it was a nice little ad, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know,
why not?
So if you're listening to this on iTunes or whatever, if you're listening to this as a podcast, as was initially intended, you can look at us on YouTube. You can't see our faces.
If you want.
If you want to, you know, you can appreciate the nuance of Brian Lloyd's rage and opinions.
Various hand gestures. Various
see, that's it. Gestures. See, that's just it, right? That's the problem.
We've already begun.
Because see, I am...
That's just it. That's just the problem. We are bang on a minute in, Brian, for you to be like, that's the problem with that.
What I was going to say was that I am wont to use certain hand gestures when I'm talking.
Just, yeah.
And normally, if it's on a podcast, you don't hear that. You can hear the passion without the hand gestures.
Maybe it's a good thing, though, that people can, like, imagine... You know, like they probably imagine you're quite.
But
an
like, I mean,
person.
Okay, hang on a sec. We know this from like you know from years of filmmaking history that it's more about what people think. It's that kind of gap. Why are we giving them you know the visual aspect of it? They should be able to imagine it. You
yeah,
know, that kind
that's
of
very true. That's very true. You don't want to talk down with your audience.
No,
you know, you don't.
That's
want
what
to
I'm
talk
saying. You want them to imagine. You want them to fill the gap.
Yeah.
Speaking of not talking down with your audience, this is a blockbuster special. So there's not a huge amount out in the cinemas this week that we could review because some movies are embargoed, some movies haven't press screens, and next week is a big one because
Deadpool
2 is going to be out.
Sure.
So, okay, Brian, let's talk. You put a poll up on the site and on social media over the weekend.
I printed the results for him.
And Deirdre printed the results because, again, Deirdre is your carer. And I
knew what the results were. I didn't need them printed out. I mean, thank you. I appreciate it.
No, but you had to look those up earlier. So you couldn't have known them off by heart.
Anyways, let's...
It's a good thing this isn't live. It's a good thing this isn't live. Brian would be like running outside.
No, I wouldn't. I had my I have my phone here. I could have got the results.
Turn your phone off.
It is off. Anyways, let's go through it then. Let's get to the poll results.
It's all you, Brian.
So what was this poll for, Brian?
Who's up the poll, Brian?
Right.
Who's up the poll?
Sheridan Cooley. No, so the poll results were basically what were the 12 blockbusters, upcoming blockbusters that people were looking forward to. We have 39% Deadpool 2, mm-hmm. which I think is pretty like let's get a little clap going there. It's good. That's at 39%, far and away the biggest film coming out that people are most excited
about. It's also the soonest. It's also
it's literally next week, so yeah. Incredibles 2 and Jurassic World Fallen Kingdom both joined 10%. Mission Impossible Fallout 9%.
That's an interesting one.
Which is interesting, yeah.
People just want to see Tom Cruise break his ankle.
I know, right? I do too, though.
Scientology's not going to heal that, mate.
Well, I mean, you know, you
It'd
said
really
it.
Really funny if that whole thing was actually a publicity stunt and he was grand. And the whole thing.
Did you
was
see the
actually,
footage, though? When you see it, it's
and
like,
Graham Norton.
Yeah, you do see it.
Oh, no, it pops right out.
And like, he gets up and, like, hobbles on.
Yeah.
Hobbles on, like, fair play.
Maybe he's just a really good actor and he hadn't actually broken his.
I mean, the amount.
He's, like, ambidextrous with his ankle.
Yeah.
And plus, as well, the fact that, like, I always think with Mission Impossible, half of the reason you're watching it is because you're like, holy crap, what is Tom Cruise going to throw himself out of next for my enjoyment? Like, you know, that kind of way.
The stunts, the stunts keep going on.
Yeah, exactly. And then we had Solo, A Star Wars Story and Ant-Man and the Wasp at 8%. So, I mean, okay, well, I suppose
Outside of Deadpool 2, it's fairly evenly.
Kind of split. But, like, I mean, Deadpool 2, like, I mean... We were talking about this in the office beforehand. Like, the marketing campaign that Deadpool 2 has mounted has been incredible. Like, only there today, they had that thing with the Eurovision.
The Eurovision video, and Celine Dion.
And Celine Dion.
That Celine Dion video, D, is fantastic. It's just, if you haven't seen it, look up the Van City, where we have it on site.
Yeah.
Ryan Reynolds' Twitter and Instagram. It's incredible.
Oh, it's so funny. And actually, I don't know if you guys saw, but only in the last few hours. So you know how around Infinity War, there was the whole hashtag Thanos demands your silence.
Yeah.
It was,
so Ryan Reynolds, yeah, he released his own one about like not giving away Deadpool 2 spoilers. And I can't remember the wording of it exactly, but it's like, hashtag Deadpool demands your sister shoot. That's an autocorrect. I meant silence.
Yeah, there's this big long thing.
Yeah, it's this big long thing. Yeah, yeah.
But we'll
get a picture of it, sure.
But yeah, I mean, I suppose that 39%, that wouldn't surprise me in the slightest if that was down to the really effective marketing campaign.
So just I have this. So just what Dee was alluding to there, I have Ryan Reynolds' Twitter open here, talking about the marketing for Deadpool 2. So the final paragraph of the kind of Infinity War his take, and Ryan Reynolds is having a great time with this, as are the marketing people at Fox. So it was only a handful of people know the film's true plot. One of them is not Ryan Reynolds. We're asking that when you see Deadpool 2, you don't say a fucking word.
You cursed! You Sorry, cursed! Boss. You cursed!
It's verbatim. Don't say a effing word about the fun shit in the movie, because it'd be super lame to spoil the fact that Deadpool dies in this one. Kidding, not kidding. Kidding? Godspeed. Hashtag Wade Wilson demands your sister. Sorry, stupid autocorrect silence. Yeah, as Dee said. And for some reason, in this picture, so it's like, again, look this up and we'll try and get it on screen for you. It's like a baby's hand for some reason.
And a dog.
And it's from the start with the first movie, because they had to do so much guerrilla marketing with the first film, because it's such a small budget for the type of film that it was.
Yeah.
They really kind of stumbled across something marvelous.
Yeah.
Well, even with the first one, remember they had the fact that it was like released on Valentine's Day and he was doing all the like little love hearts and stuff. Like, it does go to show that those kind of images like stick with people, because then it was a huge box office success and stuff, the first one.
Yeah, do you remember when they actually released that poster? And made it look like a romantic comedy.
It was released on Valentine's Day.
Yeah, on Valentine's Day with, what's her face, Marina Bacar and thing. And it looked like it was done like one of those like Nancy Meyers posters. Like, it was hilarious. Like.
Yeah. They're doing a load of ones now that are like referencing different movies. Like, there's the one of him on the little trike that's meant to be a throwback to Josh Brolin in the Goonies.
They're having a good crack on tour to see them as well. Brolin and him are just ripping a piss out.
Oh, completely. Yeah. There's even like, I saw it up by George Bernard Shaw. There's even like a mural of like Deadpool and a unicorn. Like, that's just like, it's crazy. Like,
oh yeah,
it's nuts. Bad. Incredibles 2 and Jurassic World: Fallen Kingdom at 10%. Yeah, that's not surprising, because like Incredibles 2. Out of all of them, I mean, obviously Deadpool 2, sure, but Incredibles 2 is the one I'm really, really looking forward to. I loved the first one.
Like, my only concern with it would be, well, Fiona Flynn, actually, our TV editor, Fiona Flynn, I'll give her a shout out. She was, and I thought she raised a really good point in that she was talking about how the whole kind of stay-at-home dad thing is a bit kind of outdated. So there's that, first of all. And then second of all, one thing I was kind of concerned about was the fact that they swapped the release dates for Incredibles 2 and Toy Story 4, which would make me think, A, they're investing more in Toy Story 4, which is fair enough. I mean, you have so many fans there and so much expectation. But will that also in turn mean that maybe less time and effort was put into Incredibles 2? I hope not. I hope it is great, but I don't know. The first one was just so good.
Yeah.
Like, can it live up to that?
Much as well with Pixar is the John Lasseter, all the stuff going on there, because he's not with Disney anymore. Nobody's quite sure what happened, but there was like kind of
there was something
hashtag Me Too thing early, and he resigned or he took a step away for a while. So like, in terms of creatively, how much of a difference is that going to make? Because he was the head honcho for Pixar.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And obviously, like, what, he co-directed their...
Well, the good thing is it's
story.
Brad Bird's baby.
Yeah.
So, like, same with Ratatouille. The Incredibles was really down to Brad Bird, so...
Yeah, and the fact that, like, I mean, I wouldn't... No, I don't think John Lasseter's absence would have any effect on Incredibles 2. I don't think.
Yeah. Because he's been in development for years as well.
Exactly, yeah. And like,
I think
the
Toy Story movie, like you said, I think he is more of an influence kind of in that.
Yeah, he did the first one. Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
And I think he take over from the second one halfway through filming or something. Yeah, so there's a big connection there.
Jurassic World: Fallen Kingdom. That's interesting as well, because I think, you know, the fact that Jeff Goldblum was involved in it, are we allowed?
Well, we do. This is the thing with the Junkets. I never know
what to say.
There's a chance, there's a good chance I might be speaking to Jeff Goldblum, Chris Pratt, and Bryce Dallas Howard. But these things fall through all the time, through schedules and all that stuff. So yes, we could be.
Jeff Goldblum,
so you're like, are we allowed?
Jeff Goldblum, though, like, I'm so, like, I'm very jealous. Like,
are you?
Jeff Goldblum, yeah, are you kidding me? Like,
I have a friend on Twitter and we just constantly tag is one it a Twitter friend? Jeff Goldblum thing.
Is it a Twitter friend or is it a friend of yours that's on
no,
Twitter?
No, she's my a friend of
actual
mine
friend.
On Twitter.
Actual friend, really.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
We're just wondering. Like, just about Twitter friends.
That's true.
No, no. And I think Lighthouse Cinema are doing some kind of like Jeff Goldblum Day.
Well, they did that
day,
before.
Which is exciting.
They do that every year. They do that Jeff Goldblum's Day.
Oh, yeah.
So that Jurassic World Fallen Kingdom, the first one of the Jurassic World series is one of the biggest movies of all time.
Yeah.
Oh, which, yeah. It's like the fifth highest grossing.
I don't
know.
Anybody
like that?
Saw
yeah.
that coming as well as it. I mean, the Jurassic Park sequels weren't great. Even like the Spielberg directed one, it was strange for him to come back.
Lost World,
the second one with Vince Vaughn. But Jeff Goldblum was the star of the latter films, the second one anyway.
Mm.
It looks like a cameo. He did Bill Simmons' podcast. It's a very interesting interview because
he's weird, isn't he?
Well, Goldblum, I think he enjoys taking the piss a little bit. He really is like almost like Nicolas Cage, but not unhinged.
Yeah,
you know, he enjoys.
He knows he's in on the joke.
Exactly.
Like he knows he's
being
he's irreverent.
A very smart guy.
Yeah. I'm interested to see what to do with Fallen Kingdom, primarily because, you know, like as you were saying, like the Lost World, this feels like it's the Lost World done again, you know, but obviously it's not. I think Juan Antonio Bayona is a good enough director that
he's a very tense tension. It's less on the, I suppose, not comedic, but less on the adventure.
Exactly. Yeah. More kind of skewed towards horror. Now the trailers have been grand. They've been okay, but I'm more kind of like, just what's he going to do with it? Because he said before that this is intended to be much darker. It's intended to be more closer to a horror than anything else. I'm like, yes, horror
he's
dinosaurs.
He's coming back for
sure.
The third one, Colin Trevorrow.
Colin Trevorrow. Yeah, he's apparently coming back for the third one, I think. Yeah. But, like, I mean, after he left episode 9, that kind of makes sense.
I know. I mean, it's funny because you can kind of say, because you read pieces that say he's kind of difficult. He's kind of a difficult director. And
yeah.
He's kind of difficult to work with or whatever. And then you kind of bounce from Star Wars for whatever reason. But a lot of directors have had problems, and this is leading up to Solo a little bit. A lot of directors have had problems with the Star Wars movies have come and gone.
Yeah.
And it's very easy to point the finger at the person
and be like, oh, screw
difficult.
Him.
Well, the proof is in the pudding there.
Yeah. I think the fact as well that, that sounded like I was farting.
Nobody expects maturity from the show at this
point. I think a lot of the problems that have been kind of beset by Star Wars is the fact that this is a massive investment by Disney. So it's the kind of thing that, like, there can't be any kind of mess ups with it. There can't be any kind of, you know, experimentation with it. It has to be done exactly as it has to be done. It has to be done by a certain date. They really are pushing it because, you know, Disney paid all the money to get control of these and they need them to make money.
They've already made their money though, haven't they? Really? Like, I mean, this isn't just another Star Wars trilogy. This is like a whole, like, and you know, look, did you see the poll we put up on the film show? You didn't see, you were tagged in it.
Oh yeah, I remember. Yeah, the Star Wars nerd thing. Yeah, great. Yeah.
No, because we put a poll out because myself and Dee retweeted it. You didn't.
I didn't. Yeah. And I made a point. Actually, I'm glad you pointed. I made a point of not retweeting. Okay. I made a point.
I actually thought you put it out and you were having bit of a laugh at yourself.
No, I didn't.
Have a sense of humor, Brian.
Yeah, Brian. Anyway, the poll was Blockbuster Season Special. The show this week, will Brian Lloyd go full Star Wars, Marvel nerd, or DC nerd? Ooh, controversial. And I voted for DC nerd just because I wanted to piss you off.
Sure, yeah.
But Star Wars nerd was the winner, 57%.
Yeah.
Marvel was 29%. So you're obviously a huge fan.
Oh, yeah, totally.
And are you going to be, do you think, a fan of Solo?
Well, I tell you, I said this before. I am really excited to see it for two reasons. Number one, as you said, yes, I'm a big, giant nerd. And secondly, I am a journalist and I want to know what was the end result of all the kind of the backroom dealings
and
the politics.
Speaking of directors that had issues, Ron Howard came in there. Yeah.
Ron Howard came in to replace Phil Lord and Chris Miller. I want to see what was the end result. Yeah. Because you have to remember, like, this film was nearly done when he got fired, or when the two of them got fired and Ron Howard got drafted in.
How's the credits going to look, I wonder?
Ron Howard is going to be classed as director, apparently. That's
so
it.
The other two guys aren't going to be... So they must have reshot at least half of it.
More than half. The rumours going around were that Ron Howard shot at least 80% of this film.
Yeah, but they're being very vague with exactly how much it was, which is fair enough because you don't want people to know how much of a screw-up it was.
Oh, yeah, completely, yeah. And this is it. Like, you have to wonder as well, you know, how do you balance that tone? Because again, going by rumors, and we only have rumors, Phil Lord and Chris Miller were aiming for something like Ace Ventura. And the initial kind of concept for this film was it's a Western in space.
Yeah.
So obviously Ron Howard was kind of leaning more towards what was originally planned, and Phil Lord and Chris Miller were going off and doing something completely different. I'm more curious to see how what's it going to look like, rather than, oh my God, I'm really excited to see this Star Wars movie. That's it for me.
Yeah. I mean, it's going to have spectacle anyway. Mm-hmm. With that kind of budget and that kind of cast. Woody Harrelson, you know, Emilia Clarke. I always like seeing Woody Harrelson in films. He's always fun.
Yeah.
But I'm struggling to...
You're struggling to really kind of get excited about it. Yeah. It does nothing for you. Like.
Well, the poll also says that other people aren't super psyched for it.
Yeah, 8%. To be fair, 8% is pretty lackluster in
for
fairness.
A Star Wars movie. Yeah, that's exactly. Soon enough as well.
Yeah.
I mean,
it's not
that far off.
That's what I'm saying. That's a couple of weeks. Yeah. That's telling, I think. I think that's telling about the general sentiment of how people are. And it's the same with Ant-Man and the Wasp as well. Like, I mean, after Avengers Infinity War and how kind of, you know, impactful that ending was, how can you care about anything other than what happens next?
Let's talk about Avengers Infinity War.
Because you saw it last night, didn't you?
I paid to see it last night. Like a regular Joe Soap there now, who doesn't get to go to the films for free. And it was a bit of a mess, but there was no way it wasn't going to be a bit of a mess, because there's so many characters, you know, so many egos, so much. And so the Russo brothers, I think, did an incredible job pulling it all together, given the spectacle, the scope, you know, the amount of moving parts there. And it's mind-boggling how they did it. I mean, I can't fathom, you know, that many movie stars, that much stuff to do on set. I mean, it was fine. I mean, I'm not a huge Marvel nerd of these films in general. I'm really looking forward to Deadpool 2 because it has more of an angle. It's, you know, it's more of an edge, obviously. It's all rated, apart from the David Leitch angle, apart from the Ryan Reynolds angle. It's not a particularly great film. Is that fair? Is that, because I know you give a four, you look so defensive, Brian.
No, I'm listening.
It's like, I know you give a 4 stars. Is that, I mean, and everybody has. Is that 87% Rotten Tomatoes, right?
Yeah.
And I know you're a fan as well, Dee.
Mm-hmm.
So am I just getting old?
Yes. I think it's flawed, but I do think that in terms of like just epicness and there being like so many like amazing like moments and everything, like I'm not even like a super big Marvel fan, but I did feel very like moved by it. I did feel like I kind of went on, you know, with all the highs and all the lows and everything. Like I genuinely like found it like really moving. And I thought that the Russo brothers did a really good job in kind of, for me, I think that the theme of sacrifice was kind of key to it. And I feel like they went in with that idea.
I mean, heavy.
Yeah, but that's the whole thing. And they stuck with that idea from start to finish. And they made the film that, you know, they had in mind from the start, if you get what I mean. Like they had a very clear vision. And I think that they saw that vision through. And for me, I thought it was a great movie.
Yeah, I don't know. I found it very cluttered. And it was like an assault on the senses. For a very long time.
But it's a good assault on the senses. I saw it in IMAX in like the front row and I still loved it.
Yeah, I mean, my kind of first take from it was, okay, so when the Guardians are on screen, that was when I was laughing and that's when I enjoyed it most. And I think that comes down to James Gunn and these characters that he created and these actors that he cast in those roles who just have dynamite chemistry. Second film wasn't as good as the first film, in my opinion. That said, Chris Pratt in that role, Star-Lord, he's just a blast. And, you know, even then he's kind of has a back and forth with Thor, with Chris Hemsworth's character.
That scene was brilliant.
Yeah, I mean, it's
great.
So good. It's a funny scene, right? But it's very basic as well. Like, it didn't feel like I had that zip. It didn't feel like I had that zip that James Gunn's dialogue does.
Yeah.
Yeah, but at the same time, they did, like, it was more, and we talked about this before when we were reviewing it, like, it's not really concerned with, like, character development and all that. I mean, you had like, what was it, like 18, how many movies were there, like 18? There were like they had all the previous movies to establish all the characters and to develop them. This was more kind of seeing them in different dynamics, but it was mostly about kind of seeing them in action. So I understand you kind of missing out on that part, but as well, they couldn't have possibly fit that in alongside all the action sequences they had to get.
I mean,
there's
so much going on. I mean, 100%, it's so much going on. And, you know, Marvel have built this, like, machine now. Like, it's one of the biggest movies of all time. It'll probably clear $2 billion ultimately.
Probably.
Which is the blockbuster of blockbusters, which then itself leads to I mean, you should be able to analyze it deeply, you know, where you go, yeah, oh, this film is just whatever, this film is just whatever. At this point, they're not.
Oh, no, God, no, no,
you know,
no.
This is almost a genre of itself.
Oh,
now,
yeah.
You know?
Yeah, yeah, totally, yeah. I mean, like, there's one of the criticisms I've seen being leveled against Infinity War, and to be fair, it is a valid one, I think, is the fact that it's all sizzle and no steak. As yeah. in, like, it's made this big, huge statement of being like, oh, it's going to do this. And then it's like, well, you're not really going to follow up on any of it. Like,
yeah.
You know, that kind of way. So it's, yeah, I don't know. Look, I mean, I can definitely see why certain people were not impressed by it. I'm not just saying you. Yeah. Like, I'm talking to other critics weren't really kind of gone on it.
Well, it's some that just don't like that genre. And that, and that's not true. Like, I mean, I'll enjoy yeah. those films, definitely.
Sure,
I mean,
yeah.
for want of a better word, it's a very superhero-y yeah. superhero movie.
Yeah, a lot of superheroes.
Yeah, like it's yeah. very much... Like, what's kind of made superhero movies generally more palatable with people is that you can define it as a genre. As in, like, you look at Deadpool, it's a screwball comedy.
Yeah.
You look at, like, you
Thor
know,
Ragnarok.
Thor Ragnarok, it's a popular 80s comedy.
Again, and I mean, I wasn't the biggest fan of the world of Thor Ragnarok as much as everybody else was, but I appreciate, like, what Taika Waititi tried to do.
Yeah.
You know, and that he had an angle, they improvised, yeah. they, you know, which were... The best parts of the film, the comedy yeah. was the best part of the film.
Yeah. And like you look at like Winter Soldier, like, and that was kind of done like a 70s espionage thriller.
Yeah.
Like,
you know, had a real sort of vibe to it.
Yeah.
And I mean, I get it. The Russo brothers, obviously, you know, like, they're Captain America movies. It's a difficult balance to strike, and I get how difficult their job
yeah.
is.
Yeah.
And I don't think they could have done a better job.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah. Yeah.
But
I think they were
those
kind
elements,
of...
I just think, are so. I just thought it was absolutely insane. Did have the best villain, I think, which isn't
yeah.
which is kind of faint praise, I suppose.
Yeah,
for the Marvel universe, for yeah. this Marvel universe in particular,
for sure. Yeah, yeah. Like Josh Brolin, I think, was really well cast as Thanos. Yeah.
Okay, D, we have the blockbusters by the decade. We put
yes.
another poll out to see what people's favorite decade for blockbusters were.
Yes. Will I read the results?
Yeah, go for it. No,
okay,
you go for it.
Grand. So, this is everyone's favorite blockbuster decade. We decided to put it down to like four categories: the 2000s, 1990s, 1980s, 1970s, and 1990s came out on top. 45% voted for that. For the 80s. Came second, 38%. The 2000s, third at 15%. And the 70s only got 2%.
I mean, fair enough. The 70s yeah. was, I mean, the Jaws and Star Wars.
Yeah,
kind
that's
of
kind
it,
of
yeah.
is. I mean,
yeah.
it was kind of the decade that kicked off the
yeah.
kind of term, I suppose, as we know it today. But even Jaws was, what, 1975? So you're talking about half the
Yeah, literally half
time.
the decade
yeah.
was before it even started.
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's kind of interesting, though, because I think from the 90s on, you could see that studios were kind of really starting to reckon with the idea of massive properties, you know, that sort of way, that it wasn't just
that
like...
opening weekends.
Exactly. Yeah. yeah, yeah. That whole thing. And not even...
Just before Simpson and Bruckheimer. And
yeah, that. Yeah, exactly that. But even as well, it was the fact that it's the thing of, from the 90s on, you could see it was about, okay, we need to make this run and run and run. So like, if we have to get a sequel out of, we have to get a threequel out of, we have to kind of consider, can we do spin-offs? Can we
yeah.
do something, whatever? Like, and that kind of seeded off in the 90s. And then by the 2000s, it was just everywhere.
Yeah, yeah.
But in the 90s, I think what I think is more interesting about it is the fact that in the 90s, you could see they were literally hurling muck at the wall and seeing what stuck. Because
yeah.
you had like Armageddon, you had Independence Day, you had Face Off. You had, what else? You had Deep Impact. You just had like these massive range, just like trying everything. Like literally, let's get John Travolta and Nicolas Cage in a film together and get one of them to cut their face off and just see
yeah,
what happens.
A high concept. Yeah.
Just, yeah, yeah. exactly.
We'll get John Woo, there'll be some slow-mo shit,
yeah.
some
there'll
doves.
There'll be doves, yeah.
Double guns, dives, shooting people.
All that kind of stuff. Yeah, just really kind of make it as big and weird as possible
yeah.
and just
yeah.
see what works.
Big and weird is definitely a word I'd use to describe it, because I was looking up just some movie titles just before coming on air there, and there are just so many good films in the 90s. Like, I was trying to pick one or two out of this list and I just couldn't, so I'm just going to ream off some of them. Terminator 2, Judgment Day.
Yes.
So you're a big fan of that.
Yes.
Silence of the Lambs, amazing. Pulp yep. Fiction, Shawshank Redemption. And again, these are to do with kind of the big and weird stuff you were talking about, but Fight Club, The Matrix, Forrest Gump, Ghost. There were just so many good movies.
I mean, good movies, but Fight Club wasn't a blockbuster. Fight Club lost its arse
yeah,
in the box
yeah.
office initially.
I don't know why it came up in that list
yeah,
then, but
I mean,
it did. I suppose
budgets,
maybe now.
Director,
yeah, yeah.
I mean,
and maybe it's considered that now, if you know what I mean, like almost retrospectively, even though it technically wasn't.
Yeah, it was one of those films that people look back on and give out about now. You know, hasn't aged very well. Toxic masculinity and all that crap.
Well, true though. I mean, it hasn't. Like, I mean, okay, leaving aside whatever about the politics of it, it hasn't aged well. Like, you look at it now, like, and I think it's very kind of aware of itself. I think it's really kind of like the way that it's kind of done, you can kind of see all the turns and twists. I mean, maybe that's just the kind of thing because it's been watched so many times, you can just see everything in it now. Yeah. You know that kind of way?
I mean, that twist and that has been done.
It's been done to death. Like,
and and it's the kind of, it's either that or the Sixth Sense that people go to for that twists.
Yeah.
And they've both kind of been, like, you know, ripped off for want of a better
phrase. That's another 90s movie.
Yeah.
Sixth Sense.
There you go. There Sixth
you
Sense.
Go. There you go, yeah.
Made a fortune. Made a fortune. Unbreakable still his best film. How and ever.
I tell you what, though, I'm surprised Unbreakable didn't. Unbreakable was 2000s, wasn't it?
Unbreakable wasn't considered really a blockbuster.
Yeah.
So it depends what type of criteria you're looking for
exactly.
a blockbuster. So, I mean, back in the day and back in the 90s or whatever, you would have said you would had it on budget, right? But in terms of what it grosses to be a blockbuster. So 100 million is a hit, 200 million is a blockbuster. That's gone completely out the window now because
it's
costing you $500,000 to shoot and, you know, release a film of that scale. And with the marketing costs and everything else. So
I suppose is it in relation now to really your budget and how many times back your budget you make?
And it's now they're opening movies in China as well. Yeah. So, I mean, I think there's a deal there with they get a lot less of the ticket
prices in
China. But the first Deadpool didn't open in China, still did nearly 800 million globally. So it'd be interesting to see what happens with the second one. So, okay, what's your favorite 90s blockbuster, Brian? You going to say Terminator?
Yeah, I probably would say Terminator 2, but then again, like, I have a soft spot for Con Air, like, you know, that kind of way. And then, like, you could even say, like, Die Hard with a Vengeance, like, you know what I mean? So it's kind
of... Die Hard with a Vengeance is a cracking...
So good. Jeremy Irons, like, I don't
Simon
think...
Says.
Yeah, it's
probably one of the best threequels out there.
Oh, it is! Yeah, it is the best threequel, I think. I would class it as the best of, like, I'm talking, like, better than Return of the King, Return of the Jedi, Return of whatever...
Return of the King. Sorry.
You think?
No.
Okay. But yeah, no, the way that film was just, it's so good. It's so, so good. Like, I mean, even the one-liners, the dynamic between him and Samuel L. Jackson, just all of it was so good. So good.
What about you, Dee?
I don't know if I can pick one. I've named so many there. Although, you know, last night...
You're
going to
say Beauty and the Beast, aren't you?
No.
That's a blockbuster.
Not.
The Lion King. That was the 90s, isn't it? Yeah, like Disney did that.
No, I actually can't pick one. But you know what? I did, just because I mentioned it there, I went back. Everybody else was watching the Eurovision last night except me and Ivan. We were watching The Matrix. It's so good.
I mean,
it's still so amazing. You go back and look, some of the special effects have aged a bit. Like, obviously they have. But it's still like such an amazing movie.
It was groundbreaking.
Yeah, yeah. And I mean, it's like, what, over... nearly 20 years on next God year and hello. It's so good.
Yeah, I remember seeing that on VHS.
Everybody walking around with those sunglasses thinking they look like Keanu Reeves.
Yeah, pre-John Wick.
Amazing. That's where he met the Chad Stileski and David Leitch.
Coordinators, we're gonna get into that a little bit later.
I can see you were just primed, right? Just waiting for it.
Finally, there's something with density I can just tee off on.
What's your favorite 90s movie?
I'd be kind of like, because I'm not that much older than Brian, so the 90s were like, what's that for? My favorite movie, my favorite movies of the 90s aren't blockbusters. My favorite movies aren't in the 90s, they're not blockbusters. But my favorite blockbuster, Scream, Swingers, Gross Point Blank, High Fidelity, I think it was 2000. So I would say I'd have to go with Con Air, Face Off.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because it just, around that time, it was
ridiculous.
You know, kind of online geekdom was blowing up as well. Mm. And, you know, Wayne of Cool News and another John Woo, which was based off another John Woo movie, Broken Arrow, which is what he says in it. So it's just, there's something about that time that was quite. I mean, obviously bombastic, but naive as well.
Yeah, there's an innocence to it. Yeah. I think there was real innocence to it. And I think a lot of that was John Woo as well. I think he was kind of like, because like you look at like Hard Boiled, you know, any of the stuff he did with Chow Yun-Fat, like he's really kind of like, they're really dark, they're really kind of gritty, they're really kind of like very based in Hong Kong and that kind of really seedy, cynical.
Yeah.
And
then you look at The Killer and stuff.
Yeah, exactly.
The remaking The Killer. John Woo's doing it. He's directing.
Oh, okay. But then you look at the American stuff and it's really joyful and over the top and he's really happy. Like, and I think that's kind of, I think he himself was so glad to be in America that kind of enthusiasm came out in his movies, I think.
Yeah. Well, Face Off is a blast.
Yeah.
Really, Face Off is
so ridiculous, but it's so much fun. Mm-hmm. Okay, we'll move on. We're going to go into movie news.
So will we do mailbag after news?
We'll do mailbag after news, yeah. Sorry, Dee had a structure here and I've just...
We did, yeah. We just drawn
out the structure. No, not that. Keep to the schedule. Sorry.
There's going to be a post on my computer now.
Yeah, wait until you see. See, the people don't know this, right? Deirdre, right.
Just to put it in context.
Okay.
Brian has like a million things to remember and to do, and I'm actually trying to help him.
Sure, but what Deirdre's way of helping you is basically she'll cover your computer screen with post-its of things.
I never
that you're
covered the whole thing.
You
have. Never had that.
You absolutely
many
have. What are you talking about? I was gone for a week and I came back and half the screen was filled in post-its.
Yeah, you were gone for a whole week.
Yeah.
Did you ever see that episode of Simpsons years ago? One of the early ones where they give the family the rubber things to hit each other with so they can let out the rage.
Oh, yeah, true. Yeah.
Yeah, you remember that day, Regan? Yeah, you remember that? Where they're like, and they're like, they're trying to take the things off so it's just a steel ball. Old school episode of The Simpsons back when it was That's great. Like a, you two guys should do that.
You know what I thought you were going to say is speaking of The Simpsons because we were talking about the post-its, you know the whole do it for her, remember he had message and then he covers it with the photos of Maggie. I thought you were going to say that I'm going to cover all the with post-its and leave some like sinister message for Brian.
We don't need to leave subliminal sinister messages for Brian. We just tell him.
You just tell him.
Or write it on a post-it.
Or write it on a post-it and let him know I'm going to murder you.
It happens.
Anyway, Dee, what have you got for us?
Okay, so first up, just in off the presses. So we all know the Get Out writer-director Jordan Peele, who is awesome.
He is.
So
Oscar winner.
Winning, yes. He won for best screenplay. But yeah, he has finally revealed some details for his next movie. It's called Us. He unveiled a teaser poster for the film on social media. And the movie's being described by Universal, who also actually distributed Get Out. But they're describing it as another original and provocative thriller and as a new nightmare from the mind of Peele. So we don't have any
The mind of Peele.
Yeah. That's a nice ring to it. But we don't know anything plot-wise yet. We know it's going to be released on March 15th, 2019. Lupita Nyong'o.
Soon enough, yeah.
It's very soon. Yeah, yeah. I suppose it's because it's drama, maybe in terms of like turnover and stuff. Exactly. It's easier. But the people who are in talks for it are Lupita Nyong'o is in talks to play the lead, I believe. Also Elizabeth Moss, who people would know from The Handmaid's Tale. And then Winston Duke, who played M'Baku in the Marvel movie. Remember, he's the one that challenges T'Challa. So
yeah,
he's kind of up and coming and he's cool.
Isn't he? Yeah. I'm Jordan Peele. I'm on board straight away.
Yeah. Totally.
That man's got something to say and he's doing it in a really unique way for very little money.
Yeah.
So everybody wants to work with him.
I tell you what though, I think the burden of expectation on him, it must be huge.
Oh yeah, it will be. Yeah,
like
you
got to think like Get Out like did so well and it was so intelligent. So like I have every faith in him. Like you know that kind of way. I have every faith in what he's gonna do. But at the same time, I would think, Jesus, I would not want to be Jordan Peele because like you've got to follow up one of the most groundbreaking, original, innovative horror thrillers of the past 30 years. How do you follow that? Like
yeah,
you know what I mean.
I mean, I'd say he keeps his budget low. I mean, look at Deadpool 2 as an example. Keep the budget similar. Don't blow it out of the water. Don't go and make a $150 million, $200 movie where you've got people messing with your vision.
Yeah.
Make another relatively low budget movie that you can control.
Mm-hmm.
Cast the people you want. Use the script you want to use. And then it's on you either way.
Yeah, I mean, I think that the script is really kind of key for him because obviously Get Out was, well, do we know how long he was working on that? But anyway, he's been talking about this new script for like a good while here. And I think that really key to his movies, as is key to any movie, is that screenplay.
Script. Yeah.
You know, so you have to kind of put the time and investment in it and have it just right because, in my opinion, all the other elements kind of do fall into place better as long as you have kind of the key script. And obviously he knows how to write them because he won an Oscar for
it. Yeah, sure. Yeah.
Yeah, that's original screenplay.
Yeah.
What else have you got, Dee?
Okay, so I thought that this was an interesting kind of bit of movie news, because you know how in like previous weeks we've been talking about like Netflix and Cannes and kind of just reflecting on how these like little news pieces might, you know, affect the future of film and filmmaking as we know it. So this is a funny one. This comes from Variety now, so don't, you know, if it's wrong, it's Variety's fault.
Blame it on them. Sue them.
Blame it on them. But Dwayne Johnson is now reportedly charging studios $1 million to tweet about movies he stars in. So apparently for his next movie, Red Notice, he's going to be paid about $22 million, and $1 million of this paycheck is basically to ensure that he promotes the movie on his social media channels. So that would include Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook, and especially on Instagram, it's major for him because he has something like 105 followers.
105 and then, million.
Sorry, 105 million.
We're like, we can make that much.
105 followers, dude.
Yes. And then 13 million. On Twitter. So it's kind of being referred to as, well, as it is, a social media fee. So is this going to be the future of movie salaries? And is this going to like affect future casting decisions? Is it going to depend on, you know, how many followers you have? Because I know that you were saying, Mike, in previous weeks that maybe that is how Dwayne Johnson is becoming the movie star he is, and how he's just getting cast in movie after movie because, like, you know, basically movies will get all this promotion from him talking about them on his various platforms.
It's certainly an element because he's so popular, especially on Instagram with the motivational stuff, and he's got a huge deal with Under Armour as well. But generally speaking, he's just really entertaining and he's a really funny, charismatic man. That's why he's the biggest movie star in the world now. That translates to social media, which is why he's blown up there. You can see now, as an example, Will Smith doing the same thing. So Will Smith's
he's really trying to do it. His YouTube channel and everything.
I mean, like, he's the Fresh Prince, you know. He's obviously, he was Mike Lowry. He's, you know, the guy that probably set a template in many ways for The Rock. So get your voice out there and do it. So I think actors who might have frowned upon it a few years ago are now kind of gone,
actually, maybe that's...
But Chris Braswell is great on social media too. And there are some that are like, aren't on it at all. And that certainly has to be a question, Brian, that comes up with agents and people been talked about for certain roles.
Yeah, absolutely. And in fact, if you listen to On The Line, our interview with Clive Owen, we talked about social media. And he was even saying that, he was like, look, I have no interest in this whatsoever. You know, I can understand in one sense of it that, like, you know, certain actors, you know, if they are kind of outgoing and gregarious and they're happy enough to kind of share their personal life or share even kind of whatever they want with people, they're happy to do it.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's kind of, I'm not 100% sure if I like it or not, but like, I'll put it to you this way. If it's the kind of thing of like, here's a really good actor and here's a really good actor, and this really good actor has a social media follow and this one doesn't, they're going to pick the one with the social media follow. It's just, it seems a bit like,
are you
just choosing him or her just because they're really good on Twitter and Facebook?
Anybody at that level that's going to be in contention for films is going to be A-list. You know what I mean? So maybe if it comes down to somebody, so let's say there's two people for a part or three people for a part. Let's say, because I mean, the obvious guys just come to my head are men. So say Chris Pratt, Bradley Cooper, and I don't know, say The Rock or something like that, or Chris Pine or something.
Yeah.
Bradley Cooper's, you know, probably has proven at least that he's the best actor out of those guys in the roles that he's picked and the opportunities that he's had, Oscar nominations, everything like that. But they probably go with Pratt or The Rock, you know, because they're like more bankable. And you get that added free marketing on the back of it, you know, because that's what it is. It's free marketing.
Yeah.
I mean, I almost wonder if it's going to become a trend in the future, like maybe not for lead parts, although it depends, maybe for independent lead parts, but certainly in supporting roles in the future, are we going to see essentially social media, like Instagram stars kind of getting like small roles? No, on the back of the fact that they have this media, and then they can, you know, post a selfie like on set, you know, my movie's coming out this week, go check it out. I mean, that could very well become a thing. I mean, look at the fact that, what's his name? Isn't it Logan Paul had a small role? I know, but I'm using him as an example. He had that small role in Baywatch. I know he wasn't in the theatrical release, but he was in the extended DVD one.
Yeah, and it was same with like DJ Khaled as well. Didn't he have like a cameo in like Spider-Man Homecoming? Like,
DJ Khaled. I think that the thing with, I mean, I could be wrong, but I think the thing with those YouTubers and stuff, audiences and influencers, is they're used to getting that content for free. They're not used to having to go and buy a thing for it. They're quite a young audience.
Yeah.
As is the platforms that they're using to engage with these people are quite young. So you don't have to pay for Facebook. You don't have to pay for Instagram. They're just apps that you use. And like, you know, ads are just thrown at your brain. So I don't know. I mean, it certainly could be. Who's to say not? But I think talent will shine through.
Sure enough, yeah.
You're very hopeful there, Mike.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I remember
cynical. The world is doomed.
We're doomed. It's just people doing selfie videos and making millions of dollars. Yeah. That's how the Kardashians, I suppose.
There you go.
You know? Sell out stuff, Brian, they do. They sell out stuff. They just post about it on their Instagrams and then they sell the stuff out. Just fly off the shelves. Flies off. Are you all right there, Brian? Cynical old Brian Lyons.
I know, just this. I can't curse. I'm not going to curse.
We're talking about John Wick 3 next.
Yay!
It's a fucking pencil!
Bring us right back around, Deirdre. Deirdre took us on a journey there.
Yeah.
Took us on a journey. She brought us right back around.
That's why I do the news, lads.
Go for it. Okay, because I'm teaming.
Okay, so there's. Can I just say, Mike pretty much bullied me into including.
I have been for weeks, to be honest.
A segment this was, on John Wick 3. Yeah. And there actually is some news, although it's a teeny tiny bit of news, but it's something.
It's not very small. It's not very small. It's
if this was any other film, you know. Okay, right. Hang on a sec now. Don't sit there
Shut
and
up,
lie.
Brian.
Don't sit there and lie to me. If this was any other film, we wouldn't even bother with this.
Hey,
but the fact that it's John Wick 3, and I'm all for it. I'm like, yeah, let's talk about John Wick Chapter 3.
Shut your face and let
Deirdre
read the story. Just saying.
If it was any other film, we wouldn't be touching it.
Sorry for interruption, Deirdre. I apologize. Go ahead.
Go ahead.
Maybe this will become the greatest threequel of all time.
I was going to say that earlier on, and I was like. Yeah.
Well, we have to see it first. Anyway.
How dare you?
Okay. So,
how dare you?
It has officially been announced that John Wick 3 is shooting. Ooh. And there have been some behind the scenes pictures posted on cinematographer Dan Lawson.
Very nice,
they're gorgeous pictures. So a few days ago he posted one of just, you know, your standard old clapperboard, but the other one is very intriguing. So it has like John Wick and he is standing on the streets and it's all like raining, so you know we're going to have a future like awesome set in the rain movie scene, and it's all like colourful and stuff. Set in New York, and I'm getting kind of a Blade Runner vibe.
Funny, I thought Black Rain. Remember Black Rain with Michael Douglas, Ridley Scott?
Yeah, I remember Black Rain. Yeah.
That really kind of like neon drenched.
His head taken off in the park. Yeah.
Right. That's what I saw. The first thing I was thinking of, Black Rain. I was like, yes, yes, Black Rain. Or Blade Runner.
What do you want me to say here? You want me to pretend like I don't think it's going to be the best movie ever made?
No, I want. What were your Infinity thoughts Wars? On this picture?
Well, I didn't know it was in production. So yeah. I genuinely, like, I mean, because we talked about it every show because of me, because I'm the host and whatever. All right. Yeah. I love the first two movies. That said, I didn't realize it was in production. So now the fact that it's in production, I'm excited, which means we're going to see it within a year. You would hope so. I love those movies, obviously.
Yeah.
You know, apart from being a Ryan Reynolds fan and loving the first movie, one of the reasons I'm really excited to see Deadpool 2 is David Leitch, because he's director. Atomic Blonde was a blast as well.
Yeah.
You know, I can't wait
also
for...
Also getting a sequel,
yeah. Charlize Theron just kicked all sorts of ass in that. So I think they're the best action movies ever made. And, you know... I've said that before. Gotten torn asunder over it.
What? Because
people
first
are like,
time I've
Hong
heard this.
Kong movies in the late 80s and then the... shut up. Like.
But like, in fairness, like, I mean, it's more kind of... I think it's... Yeah, that's that whole thing of like, oh, hard boiled and, you know, police story.
What's the like creative like movie version of virtue signaling where somebody wants you to know that they're intellectual? There has to be a version of that where they're like, well, actually, and it's like, shut
I
up.
Think
Maybe it's I have a master's in film.
Yeah, actually, there you go, yeah.
Deirdre has a master's in film. So, Brian, were you going to say something there that was wrong? Go on.
No, I was just going to say, yeah, something along the lines of Deirdre has a master's in film. That's what I was going to say. Whoopty shit, Deirdre.
No, but genuinely, like, why can't both the 80s movies be good and just acknowledge the fact that there is this like new cycle of action movies coming out from those directors that are unlike anything we've seen before, and they're really like kicking up the genre up a notch, you know, in terms of like the standard that we should be expecting at
this
point.
Exactly. So anybody who hasn't, it was like kind of newer to the podcast as well, we've spoken about this so many times
so
before.
Much.
But I talked to Chad Tedeschi, who directed John Wick 2, co-directed The Force and is directing the third one, and I was like, these films are amazing, and he was like, I was like, this is an action classic. And he was like, do you know what I mean? He was like,
it's almost like you kind of have to wait for more time to pass before you realize
exactly,
that they're classics.
Sure.
But we're ahead of the curve, guys, and we know they're classics.
I know, even that as well. I think like it's the sort of question of humility. Like you can't very well say, yes, my movie is a classic. of course this film is going to last for 100 years kind of thing. You can't, if you're that close to it, I don't think you can acknowledge it.
Yeah.
But like, I mean, definitely.
It's in terms of like all the, because we've been talking about all the blockbusters from, you know, the 90s and noughties, did they know then? You know?
Sure, yeah, so, exactly. Yeah, I mean, I don't think, I wouldn't imagine Simon West knew when he was making Con Air that like, people are going to be talking about it 20, 30 years. I'd say he was just like, look.
Like, but he's made since. Like, I think Simon West is like, Con Air was class, wasn't it? Give me another job.
Please.
Make some film.
Please.
Yeah, but like we said, and this is going to lead into your mailbag, I suppose, Brian, but there's a review we want to read out this week, because one thing I have to say is we've got quite a, you know, when people get in touch or people listen to the podcast, they really engage, which is great. Because you can passively listen to stuff and it's just kind of noise in the background or whatever, or you can listen to a show or subscribe to a show for the guests. And, you know, we have been putting out bonus episodes and we'll get to that after as well. But Brian, I really like this review because they got us, man.
They got us, man.
And this, look, self-praise is no praise. That's what my ma says. Yeah. But so what, ma? Right.
I've actually never heard this review before, so I'm looking forward to it.
Okay, everybody's zoning in on Dee's reaction.
Okay, here we go. This is from Alex Ryder, 19. All right. An excellent podcast. Films professionally assessed without any of the pretentiousness from other critics. Informative and entertaining in equal measure. Also very funny. A podcast for film fans and fanatics.
Oh, that's lovely.
We may have just read that review because Brian didn't get any emails this week.
I didn't, but
Brian's
sack
is empty this week.
My sack is empty.
Brian's sack has nothing in it this week.
My sack is sullen. It's
barren.
And my
he
sack
has a barren
is
sack.
My sacks are just hanging low. There's because there's nothing.
Went too
in
far. Took it too far. Took it too far.
He does actually say, just a final point on this. He says, "Would love to make a shout for The Town."
Love The Town.
Yeah, my favorite heist film before, and my favorite gangster film after Heat, obviously.
Yeah, really good.
The Town will do that next week.
John Hammer, a pump action shotgun, playing an FBI agent.
Right.
Awesome. Yeah.
And like, even what's his face?
Ben Affleck.
No, not Jeremy Ben Affleck. Renner. Keep going. Jeremy Renner is not terrible in that film.
He was nominated for an Oscar for it, wasn't he?
Yeah. Like, he was grand. He was good in it.
What's wrong with Jeremy Renner? Is Jeremy Renner not good now? All right. You sound like
he's going to win River as well.
Wind River was the best film of last year. Yeah, shut your face, boy.
Look, we'll have it out next week. And I haven't seen it, and I'm glad I'm going to see it, because I know, sure, I remember when I started working at entertainment.ie, you mentioned The Town a good few times.
Yeah.
Like, so I'm looking forward to having to actually watch it.
Because, I mean, Ben Affleck made three really cracking movies in a row. Mm.
He did Live by Night.
Then he did Live by Night. Yeah, but I mean, at the same time, he started with Gone Baby Gone, went to The Town, which made money. Gone Baby Gone didn't make money. And then to Argo, which won Best Picture at the Oscars. So the man can direct of a film. And this is the first time he's done a little bit of action. And, you know, it's just quite a muscular thriller. And
really well cast.
Really well cast, really funny. In parts, you know, that typical Boston way. So maybe we might do that one next week then.
Definitely.
Let's hop into Town next week, because it's an excuse to rewatch us. Yeah. Okay, the revisit is one that was suggested, Brian, by a listener.
Yeah, this was suggested by Hugh from last week, the guy in Sweden.
Yeah, but we didn't know if his name was Hugh.
Was it
Ryan
or whatever?
Because he signed it different
to the
email
address. Or what was the story?
We never found out.
He never wrote back either, actually.
No. Hey, Ryan / Hugh, what's the story?
What's the story?
Well, we'll still do the revisit.
If you're listening, you know, get in touch. Let us know you're okay. We're worried about you.
We do worry.
There seem to be a few personalities in that email, so want to make sure you're okay.
He wanted American History X.
This racist propaganda, this mind camp psychobabble, he learned this nonsense, Murray, and he can unlearn it too. I will not give up on this child yet.
Now, the thing I think of when I think of American History X is, and I know this is kind of like, it's a brilliant film and it's really, really, you know, beautifully shot, and has a really brilliant performance from Ed Norton and Edward Furlong as well. It's a really, really great film. Avery Brooks as well. People will know him from Star Trek Deep Space Nine. He was the teacher in it and all that kind of thing. The film, the scene I always think of in American History X is the curb stomping scene.
Yeah, I think that's pretty iconic.
It
just stands out in everyone's memory. It's just so horrifically violent.
It's so horrific. Yeah. Like, it is just so, like, just awful. And then what makes it more kind of terrifying, I think, is when you look at Ed Norton's reaction after it. Like, you know, that kind of way when, like, he puts the hand up and he's being handcuffed and he's got this big smile on his face. Yeah. And he looks just so kind of gleefully happy with what he's done. Like, the guy is literally, it's awful.
He's so good at doing the whole, like, maniacally
Completely great, a great thing. Yeah. I was listening to Brian Koppelman, who created the show Billions, and he wrote Rounders, one of the co-wrote Rounders.
Oh, I love Rounders.
We were talking about casting them in Rounders, I think, or there was a meeting that happened, and he said he went to Ed Norton's house and he was editing American History X.
Oh, wow.
So obviously there was a bit of an issue there with the director.
Yeah, Tony Kaye.
He said the scene that he showed them was the curb stomping scene. And they're like, oh my God. Oh, and first of all, he was jacked in that.
Oh,
you
yeah, that's tank. Right. Yeah,
and
yeah.
then he just be, was normal Ed Norton.
Yeah. Mm.
Then after that.
I think what I love about, what I really, really liked about American History X was how they kind of show the nature of that extremism. Mm-hmm. You know, that kind of way that he starts off. And you see that he's this reformed character now, that he's trying to keep Edward Furlong away from the neo-Nazis and stuff like that. But even as well as how, like, you look at Ed Furlong's character, he's this really marginalized person. He's really kind of sad. He doesn't really know what he's doing with his life. And the neo-Nazis prey upon that, you mm-hmm. know, that kind of way. They really kind of, like, see that, you know, he doesn't know where he's gone with his life. You come with us, you'll have some sort of measure of protection, and you'll feel more a part
this
of the unit.
Whole thing of like disenfranchised young men going over to the right and extreme right.
It's like the whole thing. Yeah, it's like
something
the whole
that's like really relevant today as well.
Exactly, yeah. That's it. Like, and this, I think, American History X was kind of like showing what it was like before the internet.
Yeah.
You know, that kind of, and now you've got like incels, and you have like, you know, all this far right stuff, and you have 4chan, and it's just all this kind of things. This was what it was like before the internet, you know, that sort of way.
If somebody was a racist scumbag, they had to really be in person.
Yeah, that was it. Like, they literally had like the tattoos, swastikas and the tattoos, and you could spot them from miles
now they're
away.
Eggs on Twitter.
Yeah, now they're exactly. Yeah, now they're like journal.ie commenters.
Yeah.
But I think Ed Norton's character, I think the fact that you get that dichotomy, I think the fact that you get like, this is what he was like when he was completely...
And that it's believable.
And that it's totally believable. And the bit at the end with the father, you know, when they're sitting around the coffee table and they're talking about it, and then they're talking about affirmative action. And, like, the father is like, you know, this is what, you know, and back in my day, it was the right man for the job, got the job. But now it's all affirmative action kind of thing. And it's that kind of how racism can start that subtly, you know, that sort of that it can be. Yeah.
It's a seed that's kind of planted.
Exactly. And that it's almost kind of, when you hear it, you almost think, well, that actually kind of sounds kind of reasonable to us.
Mm.
And then it goes, it starts from that and then ends up literally with a swastika on your chest, curb stomping, you know, two black kids, like, you know what I mean? Yeah. It goes from that to that, like, and how that kind of progression is felt. It's interesting, though, that you said that about Tony Kaye, because, Tony Kaye's had a big, massive problem with this film, that it was taken away from him and re-edited by Ed Norton.
So this is Michael DeLuca that was the producer on New Line at the time, and who knows? We weren't there, but there was obviously a lot of tension. There was obviously an issue with his cut, and then I'm sure there were multiple cuts, and Ed Norton, who's, like, you know, a very good filmmaker himself, you know, knows how to put a film together, knows how to direct a film as well, was obviously brought in to kind of, I suppose, make a different version of it.
Yeah.
So we don't know what happened, but I mean, Tony Kaye obviously has an issue with the final film because he doesn't feel like it's his.
Yeah.
Well, you know about the two endings, right?
Yeah,
the fact that there's just in case anyone who's listening who doesn't know, but there was an additional scene in like certain cuts of it. But I think the theatrical release ends with Edward Norton and Edward Furlong's characters, you know, in the bathroom. His little brother's been shot and he's crying and stuff. Sorry, spoiler. But obviously, if you're listening,
it's
to when you
he's
know,
5 years old.
Yeah, exactly. You should have seen it by
96,
now.
I think
Then there is a version of the film where there's an additional scene where at the end you see Edward Norton shaving his head again. So there's ambiguity in the prior one. So maybe he stayed kind of, you know, a good person and changed from his experience in the prison. And then there's the complete lack of ambiguity with saying he's gone back. He's been so traumatized by what happened to his brother. So I think that it's kind of fascinating that those two versions exist.
Well, that's quite similar to Get Out, like bringing it back around to Get Out and how the Get Out ending is different than Jordan Peele. Like, it was quite a bleak ending initially.
Very bleak, yeah.
Yeah, and even then he was saying there was a hint of comedy in it, and he watched both, I think, with an audience and, you know,
the ending
that he picked was definitely the better
the
ending.
The right one,
It didn't need that ending for impact. You know, there's something that, you know, you're kind of underlining a point.
Yeah.
I think when you end
he kind
like
of
that.
Almost brought in that ending with one of the jokes that the friend says. I think so that ending is almost kind of implied, even within a single line, rather than needing a whole scene to bring
exactly.
it out. You know what
this
I mean?
This could have happened.
Yeah.
And I mean, anyway, we won't get into the end and get out too much. It's a bit sooner than American History X. But yeah, it's a great film.
Yeah.
You know, it has its problems. It's not a perfect film. No, it's an impactful watch. Yeah.
It is.
Cinematography is stunning as well. The black and white. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think that kind of, I know this might seem like kind of obvious, but I think that kind of, the black and white kind of plays into the kind of the binary nature of racism. Yeah, that it's exactly, us versus yeah. them, that yeah. it's black versus white, like, you know. Mm-hmm.
And I mean, Ed Norton as well could have gone off and been, you know, younger version of Nicolas Cage if he wanted to be the yeah. jacked yeah. action star after leaving Las Vegas. Nicolas Cage was always one of these guys who was quite physical in terms of his performances, but yeah. Con Air and, you know, Face Off and all those other yeah. movies where he went from Oscar winning drama, drinking himself to debt, mm-hmm. leaving Las Vegas to Con Air and, you know, Mullet in the Wind,
yeah, yeah.
crash and explosions and stuff.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
it's interesting to see Ed Norton, obviously that was an obvious decision that he made to go, I'm not going to do that.
I was trying to think of what's his latest movie. Would it be Birdman? I thought he was great in Birdman, to be honest.
Isle of Dogs, he does a voice in.
Isle of Dogs, yeah, as well.
He's directing a movie at the moment as well.
That's right.
Which I'm excited to see. And he did one with, was it Ben Stiller a few years ago? We played a priest on Ben
Keeping
Stiller.
Keeping the Faith.
Keeping the Faith, played a rabbi, Jenna Elfman.
That's right, you're one yeah. from Dharma, right?
It's actually a fun little movie.
It's all right, yeah.
Sounds Sorry. Dreadful.
It's not. No,
I've got to be honest.
It was one of those films that you used to see in X-Vision. They'd be like, "Oh yeah, I'll give this a go," kind of thing. You'd like,
yeah,
like,
yeah, but that was back in the like video rental.
Oh yeah, that's what I'm saying. Yeah,
it was like a cover. You'd be like, "Oh, it looks
yeah.
all right."
Yeah, yeah. Like,
although in fairness, the equivalent now would be like if it showed up on Netflix. Yeah,
exactly.
I might check it
exactly.
out. Fair enough.
Okay, we leave it there for this week. We want to plug our own stuff.
We've got a plug.
So we've got On The Line, which we've mentioned before. We haven't really started pushing it out there yet, but we have three awesome guests.
We really do.
On The Line, do you talk to Isla
Schlesinger? Oh, is Eliza Schlesinger.
Yeah, and yeah. Brian, you talk to
Clive Owen.
I talk to Clive Owen, and I talk to Bill Burr.
You're yeah. really, yeah, like that interview's going up today, I think.
It's going
it?
Up today, yeah, so it should yeah. be live by the time you hear this. Yeah. And yeah, it's a fun podcast where we talk to people from across the pond. Bill Burr was walking around doing a shopping.
I could hear him. I listened to the cut. Yeah, you could hear him talking to, like, you could hear him like kind of like, oh yeah, sure, yeah. And then like handing off like a card.
I love that. I love that it wasn't like sitting in a hotel room doing a kind of a junket thing. You know?
Yeah, yeah. You could
I like
see
that. And then Clive Owen was up as well, so. And
I'm looking forward to hearing Bill Burr talk about F is for Family because yeah. I think that's a great, it's so underrated. I suppose
never
it's
got a great
it's
show.
Very good.
I you mean, liked it because there's a whole put you through a wall yeah. thing in it. And that's when
you yeah. get yeah. it. Well, I get that
I
from
think
me, Dad.
I think it's gotten lost in Netflix because there are so many kind of adult themed animated series on the streaming service.
I actually
service,
asked
but it
about
just
that
got kind of lost.
I saw a study because Netflix don't release stuff. I asked him, I was like, do they tell you how well it's doing? Because the study said it was one of the most popular shows on Netflix.
Yeah.
And he was like, no, they tell us nothing. So, but it's
they just, mean, tell you,
they
yeah.
just give you another season, which yeah. is obviously yeah. what they're doing. But it's a very funny show, and it's yeah. worth listening yeah. to. And we've got some bonus episodes as well. Of this podcast.
This is a really exciting one. So, the bonus episode for this week's podcast. So, in prior weeks, I did Rob Cohen, who is the director of Hurricane Heist. I still think it's pretty much the best bad movie of the year. And then also for Chris Kelly, who is the director writer of A Cambodian Spring. And this week, last weekend, I spoke to Greg Sestero, who any fans of The Room will know is Mark. Hi, Mark.
Oh, hi, Mark.
I was just, yeah, I was he can do it much better.
It seems to me like you're the expert, Mark.
Did Brian turn up for the podcast?
He did. Yeah. He was really.
Did he go?
Helpful.
Oh, hi, Greg. Did he, or was he just like,
no, I was really normal. Professional. Yeah, I was producing.
He was like helping me. He helped me set it up. And then he was like, you know, taking pictures for social media yeah. or whatever. And just for me being like, I met Mark. So it was really cool. And in fairness to the guy, he was promoting his new movie, Best Friends, which also stars Tommy Wiseau, which is great. So the two are reunited. But he was perfectly happy to talk about The Room and The Disaster Artist as well, which was great.
Imagine
you know?
He was like, I'm not going to talk about The Room. But that was yeah. like in my past. You'd be like, oh, what the?
Well,
Greg.
What else you got, Greg? What else are you talking about? Yeah. He was funny. He was talking about, and you'll hear this in the bonus podcast, he was talking about Anthony Remedy, how apparently they got the idea to write the film, he got the idea to write Best Friends when he was over in Ireland.
Oh, hanging really?
Out
yeah,
with
there
Anthony,
you go.
Hanging yeah. out with Anthony Remedy. Yeah.
Anthony Remedy comments.
Comments are one of our listeners.
One of our listeners.
Yeah. One of our listeners, yeah. There you go.
That's pretty cool. I hope he got a credit for it.
Cool. Yeah.
Well, he just did.
Yeah.
Okay, so it's a big one next week. We've got Deadpool 2 next
yeah.
week.
Yeah.
Which we're all really excited to see. And hopefully we will all have seen it.
Here's hoping.
Here's hoping. There's a press screening and there is an evening screening.
Oh, crap. Mm. Actually, I have to get on to a thing about that.
Classic Brian. Sorry. Folks.
I'll give
folks,
him a post.
That was a literal insight into Brian. On a, not, I wouldn't say daily basis, on an hourly basis. It's like, oh, I meant to mail them back.
Oh, yeah, I meant to do that. Yeah, oh, yeah. Gotta do that. Oh, crap, hang on. Where's my phone?
No, it actually has gotten to that point where I have to remind him about emails that, like, I'm just CC'd in. It's not my job, it's addressed to you.
Sort your life out, Brian.
I know, all right, I know.
Anyway,
God.
A huge shout out to Dave Regan there, who's produced, and I think he's fallen asleep. Are you awake, Dave? You're all right. No, I'm all he's grand.
He was drifting off there. He was drifting off. I saw him.
He's drifting off. Please do like and subscribe and review. And also, we did mention Brian's email address for the mailbag, mailbrian@entertainment.eu. Any comments that you have, yes. And we'll read them out and probably take the piss out of you. So yeah. It's all in good crack, lads. We'll chat to you next week.
It's wrong, Dan. It's wrong, and it was eating me up. It was going to kill me.